Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, and Pretty Ugly, as well as the Hotel series. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Susie Sue Martine. I had to do it. Author of the Bourbon Books, which includes Dibs Since September, Move On Melinda, and Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today is fellow New England weirdo New York Times bestselling author, Christopher Golden, yes. Author of many books, but here we're going to talk about All Hallows, his celebration to all things Halloween, celebration, love letter, really scary story, really depressing family drama.
We are halfway Halloween, so.
Are we halfway Halloween now?
Well, the end of this month, yeah.
Yeah, so we're going to round up and we're halfway to Halloween, which is my favorite holiday.
We celebrate Halloween from about mid-September. Mm-hmm. I would say that we are now halfway to Halloween. And also, New England Horror Weirdos, I have my Creature Double Feature mug.
Oh my God.
Channel 56.
That is so cool.
Channel 56. This is what I was going to say. I'm not going to say ruined my life, but shaped my life is Creature Double Feature.
Absolutely.
Saturdays and Sundays, my parents just smoking cigarettes and like living in the house and then being turning on the TV and I get to watch things that like a 9-year-old should never watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can't say science fiction double feature and not sing it, because that's totally Rocky Horror right there. Science fiction double feature. Come on, that's like there on your mug. Does your mug sing anyway? I just love it. My
Our local stations didn't sing.
No,
it was
Boston. Sorry.
No, that's the interesting thing you're talking about, and I'm just completely throwing everything to a tangent right now.
This is entirely
tangent.
So yeah. Now, where we can watch whatever we want, whenever we want, I really feel like the odds of a kid accidentally becoming a weirdo are lower, because in those days, you know, when I was a kid, I'm 55. When I was a kid, it was ABC, NBC, CBS, and then PBS.
And then your locals.
And two local channels. Mm-hmm. And those local channels both pretty much showed monster movies on the weekends.
Yep.
Yeah, why did that happen to us as children? So I'm 40-something, because we're lucky. Yeah. I remember seeing, I think it was The Incredible Shrinking Man when I was maybe 6. And then becoming completely obsessed because I had just been near a body of water that misted something on me. And I was like, I am sorry, I'm shrinking. And I measured myself every day for years.
Okay.
Is that anxiety disorder? Is that love of horror?
Is that why you're only 5'2"? Were you supposed to be taller?
I think so.
Okay, because the hat's not fooling anybody. You're still only 5'2". Sorry.
I know. Like,
okay, but Christopher, here's my counterpoint. I have 3 children. One of them turned 10 today. All of them are still weirdos because welcome to the internet where your 7-year-old is obsessed with the yellow wallpaper and hazmat suits and the back rooms because YouTube, where they can find all the weird stuff and they can just keep going weirder and weirder. And they're not limited by what is on Saturday. They can find, we're like, that's inappropriate. That's scaring your older sister. No, we can't watch that. That's terrifying. Where are you finding this stuff? Seriously, give me your tablet. Okay, we're done. Because they're just as weird.
Oh, I kind of like all of that.
So
before we get too far down this rabbit hole, which I want to go down.
Okay.
Christopher, please tell us a little bit about yourself for our like 2 viewers who might not know who you are. And a little bit about All Hallows, which is your most recent book.
It is. Yes, okay. Most recent book.
I listened to it, so I just have...
I listened and read for part of it. Once I got, so again, thank you for Gibson's booksellers, Ryan and Elizabeth. They sent me a signed copy, even though I couldn't be there.
Lucky.
And then I have like this weird, OCD thing where I can't read a signed copy of a book. So I had it, owned it, bought the Audible.
I almost spit out my halls. Sorry, go ahead.
I am glad you listened to it because my wife also is an audiobook person and she listened to it and she thought that the two readers were incredible. So I feel really fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We can delve into my history as much or as little as you want, but suffice
to say. We want to know about you, Christopher.
Well, so
I like backhand want to know exactly why you dedicated this book to Bracken.
We'll get there. Yes. So I have been writing full time since 1992. I graduated college in 89 and I worked in New York for 3 years. But I sold my first novel in 1992, and at the time, I was married already, but we didn't have a mortgage and we didn't have kids. And I was like, well, now's the time to make the jump to see if I can make it work. And I've been on that treadmill ever since.
So can you make it work? Did you decide yet?
Have been times over the years when I have looked for a real job. But then once I start looking for a real job, something comes along and I'm okay now for a little while.
It's like a duck paddling frantically underwater.
Yeah it is.
And it looks great.
Yeah, I have all kinds of thoughts about that, but I've written I've written or co-written over 100 novels. I write comics, I've written screenplays, including the new Hellboy movie that's in production right now. And video games and all kinds of stuff. And my last few books had been sort of like propulsive horror thrillers. And I was really in the mood for something different. I was in the mood for something that was a little bit more classic in atmosphere, and also would explore what it was like to be a kid in the 80s and what it was like to live in a New England neighborhood. And I also love the ice storm.
Every time I was reading this, I was like, this is like the ice storm meets Halloween.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that. But as soon as you said that, it's because when Jen was like, Jen had read it before I did. And when I'm listening to it, I'm like, this is hurting me. This is so sad. Because this is domestic drama. It's ice storm if it were a horror novel. That's
well, and you know, the thing is I've said all along, and I think I've sort of delved into this to greater or lesser degree many times, but I've said all like my whole career that to me, a great horror story is a horror story that is about the things that people are enduring in their daily lives. And then you add the catalyst of some supernatural or terrifying thing. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like lights a fuse that sets everything off. And I feel like that's the best way to use it. You know, it's, and again, I always say like all three of us, I'm sure right now have things going on in our lives that we're managing, but you know,
are we managing them? That's a podcast for a different time.
Yeah, we're here.
Am I managing that, Christopher?
Managing, medicating, tomato, tomato. Go on.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so I feel like, that's a shared experience, whatever it might be. And that, you know, you can connect with the idea that like, all it takes is one really bad day to make you be like, you know, I don't know. I am very friendly with profanity. So I don't know if that's,
oh no, we're fine with profanity.
Yeah. Anyway,
I love it when people accidentally swear on our show
and they're like, oh no. And we're like, you're fine. I know there's like at some mark where they worry about if it's too soon. I think it's past,
I think
five,
usually,
past 5.
Yeah. Past the 5-minute mark, mm-hmm. you can swear and you can say like terrible things.
Oh, we say terrible things from the start, but we just don't swear right away.
Oh, I think I have.
Good to
but
know.
Not today.
All right.
So yes, Christopher, you can swear.
Excellent.
You could just like say all the swears right now and we wouldn't
just get them out.
That's all right. I'd like to surprise you with that.
Okay. Oh, like a banshee.
And I've done, you know, when Jim Moore and I used to do like various seminars and things like that, and I would always start out by saying, just FYI, I say fuck a lot. So if that's an issue for you, you know, you can get your money back.
I like how you said it as like one word though. Like it was, I say fuck a lot. Yeah. Like it's an ocelot, but that one that fucks. It's a fuck a lot.
That would be an adorable name for a pet.
Yeah, fuck-a-lot. I don't think you can check it into the vet. Yeah, I'm here with fuck a lot.
I suppose only if it was a bunny.
Oh, okay.
Even better if it were Sir Fuck a Lot.
Okay, well, but Kevin Lewis.
I'm somebody who owns a dog who's called Lord Tubby. So, yes, Sir Fuck a Lot.
Sir Fuck a Lot
is the better name.
Kevin Lewis says, I miss those seminars. I learned so much from them.
Thank you,
probably,
Kevin.
Though, not and about like, Sir Fuck a Lot.
I miss him too. Not a thing. You know, life gets in the way.
And Regina says, swearing for the win. Yeah, Regina, you know we swear. It's fine.
It's weird that like we brought up swearing and all of a sudden the comments start rolling in.
We know our audience. They have it's body like, mass.
It's okay to say the F word.
It's all fine. But so Christopher, you were saying, okay, so you swear and you might say fuck a lot. And then there's also the seminars that you were doing. How did that work into the whole idea of like the one bad day where everything just in the toilet?
Well, it was just, you know, one of the things we talked about always, you know, is this idea that, you know, this hopefully the story is about something to begin with. Mm-hmm. And for me, a lot of the times, I don't know thematically necessarily what the story is about until I'm halfway done. And then I go, oh, wait, now I know what I'm writing about.
Oh, can I ask a question? Are we as writers supposed to know thematically at the beginning? Because I've never known sometimes until the end.
Yeah, I think a lot
sometimes
of writers...
Sometimes until somebody tells me thematically it was about this. And I was like, it was.
I feel like I'm just guessing because I'm definitely not part of that tribe. But I have the weird feeling that people who are what are called literary writers probably know what they're writing about thematically before they start the book.
Oh, we don't.
No.
Oh, okay.
We don't. Like I consider myself literary horror and or literary crime. And maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but Allison would probably agree with me. We actually do not know what we're talking about.
Okay, but I'm a pantser. I'm a Discovery Flashlight writer. And so I figure out where I'm going along the way. But I also didn't know I was literary until somebody in the industry told me. And I'm like, well, I still don't really know what that means. But apparently it means it's really hard to say.
I don't know what that means.
But yeah, I mean, I think some people, it's more of one of those things where you see it easier in reverse because then you see everything kind of stack up to a theme because the theme isn't one single element. And if you're writing as you go and then you find these things and then you can see the pattern in reverse rather than making the pattern as you go. I don't know. I guess different people write different ways.
Yeah.
It seems like it's very difficult for me.
Yeah.
I'm like,
oh. I tend to lean into it at that point though.
Lean in. Well, in this one, you lean into screaming banshees and haunted woods and this backyard that seems like this little street sounds like the most idyllic place unless you're an outlier, like unemployed, struggling, have an unfaithful spouse, might be a lesbian, or someone who is not of the white ethnicity. Then maybe it's not the most welcoming place. And then maybe if you're an outsider who comes from other places and maybe has a questionable history, but some of that might be deserved with some people. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, but.
Well, so.
For sure.
I like, and then I'm going to have like these observations of coming at it again from like the total, like New England small town haunt. Did you grow up in an environment that had local haunts? Because I took place, I like was an actor in a local haunt, but not until I was like in my late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah. No,
I'm a huge Halloween person. I went to school for theater. The idea of a neighborhood haunt, I love it so much. Mm-hmm. Like, is that something
no,
that...
I grew up in Framingham, Massachusetts. I lived there till I was 18. And there was nothing like that per se. There were always houses. There were people who, like, you know, turned their garage and basement into a haunted house. Like, with sheets that were like going through and the whole, you know, I love those people. and then there were
those the full-size candy bar people, or were you only there for the experience?
No, they were always the full-size candy
one
bar
and the same.
Yeah. And they had like dunking for apples and all that stuff. And, you know, which I never did. I was like, I'm going to drown in a
dunking. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I've never dunked for apples because if I like put my ears underwater, I'll have a panic attack.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So no, but, there
just
were
normal stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there were haunted houses, you know, in the area, but nothing like what is described in the book. That is actually based on a family who used to live in the area that I live in now, like a few mm-hmm. streets from here. And for 15 years or so, they did that in the woods in their backyard. And it was always for charity. And we would go every year. And it was such a great experience. And so I felt like, for the purposes of this book, I had to, you know, put that down. Let's see. Yeah, see?
Yeah, see, so Kevin Lewis says, my elementary school classmates' parents turned their garage into a haunted house every Halloween. It was awesome. Kevin, we need to know full-size candy bars. We need to have some empirical data to back up that observation.
Yeah, like, who's doing the events? What size candy are they giving out?
Well, and out here, so I'm in SoCal. So anybody from SoCal probably knows the big haunt thing out here is Halloween Haunt from Knott's. That was for years and years. Mm-hmm. And I was, for one time, married to someone who worked for Haunt, doing the set construction and doing all that. And that's a huge thing. And so I don't know if there's as many, like, I want to say organic things coming up like that, because there are those, and then Universal has theirs, like their Fright Night or whatever. So you've got these big ones that I don't know if they kind of crowd out the more, I want to say just grassroots, but I know that my ex also then was doing local haunt type things where he's bringing the smoke machine and the fog juice and everything and running those. And they are not as fun to be at when you're just like waiting for them to be over.
There's one here that the name was bought by somebody when they shut down, but they ran it for maybe 4 years, and it really set the bar about 20 years ago, which was Spooky World.
Yes. Okay, but that sounds so cute. Is it wrong to me that it doesn't sound scary?
Chills everywhere. World. I know what Spooky World has become.
Is it scary?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's corporate scary.
It was set up in a town in Massachusetts called Berlin, which is spelt like Berlin.
But Berlin.
Berlin. And
I live in New Hampshire. There we also have a Berlin.
Yeah. So it was spread out on this farmland, and it used existing buildings, but also the woods. It had like a, you know, haunted hayride, but this haunted hayride had like, you know, guys with chainsaws jumping out of the trees and chasing you on the hayride. And, like, so good. But my favorite.
But they can't touch you, right? Like in New England, they can't touch you.
Yeah, they didn't. But they can grab the vehicle and pretend they're trying to snap.
Yeah, and that's all fine.
So my favorite thing was, I always feel like I enjoy a horror movie more, or I enjoy an experience like that more when I have a screamer with me. And so my friend Craigshaw Gardner, horror writer, fantasy writer Craigshaw Gardner, and his wife Barbara were with us. And Barbara is somebody who jumps and screams her head off and is absolutely terrified. And Spooky World that year had a haunted circus.
Nope. So love it, but also nope.
They had an indoor building with all kinds of spooky clowns. And one of them
are inherently spooky. You don't have to add spooky.
Room filled with, so it was a room that was really brightly lit and filled with dry ice. So you couldn't see anything in front of you. You were going through this fog, even though it was really bright. And these spooky clowns would loom at you out of the fog. Barbara, I thought she was going to literally have a heart attack and die right there. We're going to have to call 911.
Barbara, you're a good sport.
She's still alive and well, and it's all
she's
good.
She's alive and well. And it improved my experience 1,000 times over to be with her because she was so scared.
So what you need, so in your book, one of the things that I loved is the glow sticks, so that if somebody's like, I'm a little scared, I want the glow stick experience, you can have the opposite, which is you send them with a screamer. Would you like to take a screamer with you? And you get a screamer in your group and they scream.
That's much better than just the glow stick. Mm-hmm. So I will say I have performed in a neighborhood, a very, very elaborate, amazing neighborhood haunted attraction, which was kind of larger than the town I even grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. Loved it. Then very recently we went to Budapest and we wanted to go into a haunted attraction, but they tell you full blown from the beginning, they're like, our actors will touch you. They will like do terrible things to you. They will scream in your face and psychologically torment you. And I'm like, see, that's not what I want. I want somebody else to be scared and me to be going, see, I've been the act. I'm like, nope, I don't want them to touch me. Can I do it without them touching me? Nope, not an option. Not doing it.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, see, I was the kid who, we even had one like at our church, and I was too scared to go to that growing up. And we're talking about one of the rooms and some people with flashlights, and like 9-year-old me is going, I'm just here for the candy.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I just like candy. I don't want to be scared. And now you make me read horror, Jen. This is all your fault. Anyway, go ahead.
I know. So here's the thing, Christopher. Allison doesn't overly love horror, but I know the horror she's going to love. And I said, I was like, this, All Hallows, I'm just going to like show it again. It gives me real old school Stephen King, Peter Straub vibes, but then
she sold me there.
Elevates it and makes it very now, but also still nostalgic for what we lost. And I was like, and it's only going to be super scary at like the 80% mark. And
she's undersold how scary this was. It's more like a domestic drama where, and you made it sound like there was just one horrible thing that was going to, no, you liar who lies.
There was one horrible scene
that happened. Okay, we'll talk later about what the horrible scene was, but I mean, from the
I
said like one horrible scene. Like from the Raggedy Ann doll, the scare. I mean, even the costumes of certain children were enough to horrify me. And I'm like, I love Raggedy Ann. How dare you hurt Raggedy Ann with that in my memory?
I mean, you know, look, Raggedy Ann.
I had Raggedy Ann sheets when I was
young. Can be spooky. I mean, look, the thing is that it was purposeful. And the funny thing is I've learned over time that the reviews always sort of give away the taste of the reader. Mm-hmm. And every book is going to be for some people and not for others. and two different people will review the same book, and one will love certain things and the other will hate those same things. So you can't, but for me at this point in my career, it's just like, I just write the book I want to write.
Yes.
And so, yes, it does at only really kick off and become a full-blown horror novel at about the 80% mark. But for me, it's about dread.
Yeah, the dread is there chapter, though. So she made it sound like, before I started reading it, she made it sound like, oh, it won't be. And I'm just like, Jen, you're lying to me. You don't have to understand. I have a stronger tolerance at this point, thanks to the things that you've made me read, that it wasn't going to be too much. But selling it as Straub was a good way, may he rest in peace, because that there was definitely that vibe, including the era, because like you said, this is child of the 80s. So I think even just that fact of the whole, when, and this is not a spoiler, but when certain people don't know where other people are, the fact that we can't just pick up cell phones is just still such a huge thing. Like, I just don't know where they are.
And you like, it's really difficult as writers now to go, how do we get that to happen? No matter what genre we're writing on, I think our, the way we live right now, we are too in touch. And so much of any genre, whether it's romance, oh, we just like didn't get the message to like meet each other, whether it's, you know, crime, anything, the fact that we know where everybody is right now all the time and can contact people.
Yeah.
For me, it's like, this is why I think a lot of people write like there's a big storm and it cuts out the cell phones. We're doing more early 90s, 80s stuff.
Well, heck, I still remember it was, I think, either the first or second episode of Angel where he's down in the sewers and he's got the cell phone and he's like, no reception down here. And he just like drops it because there's your out, that you can't talk to anybody because you don't have reception. And honestly, you probably don't get good reception in the sewers. It's valid.
And honestly, like right before that, a couple of seasons before that, on Buffy, you had her, she had a beeper.
If the apocalypse comes, beat me.
Exactly.
She had a good old fashioned.
I love, first of all, Christopher, love you so much that you're like a couple seasons earlier on Buffy, like you understood the actual.
Well, you may not be aware, I have a very long history with Buffy. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm aware.
All right. But yeah, no, I'm, you know.
Favorite Buffy character? 5, 4, 3, 2, Christopher, go.
Clem.
Clem!
What? Love it!
I gave up kittens. Cholesterol. Morals. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it's still one of my favorite lines. Because mm-hmm. he stopped eating.
Yeah. No, I love Clem, and Jimmy Leary is a good friend of mine who played Clem.
Oh. Well, both Clem, but also Skip, and even though, you know, Skip, not always what we thought.
Yeah. And we could really, I mean, you could go through, you know, like, I got in trouble arguing with fans about various things in the show over the years.
We're not here to argue with you about
No, I'm not.
And that's another show.
Yeah. You know, so many characters to love on all of that, on both shows. You know, I think that Charisma Carpenter got a raw deal, and she Cordelia was probably the most underappreciated character on both shows.
So had I asked myself that question, like, who's your favorite character? And I know it sounds like basic, but it's always been Cordelia. And maybe it's because I know enough about Charisma Carpenter, but I think I loved her even then.
Yeah, she's also... She's a fantastic actress, and I don't think she gets the credit for being the actress that she is.
She does not. Because there's very few actresses, I think, just in general, that can be as absolutely physically beautiful as she is and have the saddest, most expressive eyes.
Mm-hmm. And great.
And the physical comedy. I mean, I'm not going to sing again because my voice is already really bad, but the three of them doing We Are the Champions when they're like drunk and karaokeing is still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Andy Hallett was a sweet guy. You know, and Amber Benson is one of my best friends. So
I just listened to a book she narrated.
Yeah, I'm like, I think Allison and I just talked about Amber Benson for like many hours the other day.
Yeah. She is an audiobook narrator. So. You know,
yeah, she
did one of yours too. Very nice.
Yeah, she did the Pandora Room. But we've worked together on various projects many times over the years. In fact, we just are negotiating a contract for a new comic book series that we're doing.
Was that an announcement on our show?
It's a low-level announcement.
I can't tell you what it is or who it is.
Good enough. We'll take it.
But I will say it's horror, so that's good.
That is good. Speaking of horror, I'm going to backtrack. And I know Allison doesn't know Bracken McLeod, but...
I know that. I think I just friended him on Facebook because you're like,
I hope you do. I'm like, please. I know Bracken just a tiny little bit, but I love the fact when authors dedicate their book to another author who is also a really good friend. So, All Hallows... It's dedicated to Bracken McLeod.
It is.
I mean, are you in his D&D group?
Let me first clarify, is he related to Connor McLeod or Duncan McLeod? Is he a Highlander?
Clayton McLeod?
I would say yes.
Cool, okay.
I would say he's a Highlander for sure.
I have seen him in a kilt.
Yes.
And the beard.
Was there any electricity coming from the sword?
Lightning? That's a personal question, Allison. All right.
Oh, wow. You made it weird, Allison.
No, I made it weird on purpose.
Which we love. Thank you.
Here's the thing. So getting real, you know, growing up liking the things I liked and being the person that I was never, I played sports, but I never liked sports. I was not a guy's guy. Most of my close friends were girls. I was always much more interested in,
Anne of Green Gables. It's fun.
In writing, in theater, in all of that stuff. And, you know, there was that sort of toxic masculinity that tried to make you feel less than when you were that kind of guy. Now, for me, it was a lot easier than it was for a lot of other boys who were like me in that way, in that I wasn't gay. So I didn't have the extra, they called me all kinds of names, but I didn't have the extra difficulty that comes with being tortured for that. Yeah. And I was always big.
So that helps. Tall. It's hard to pick on the guy who's like, you want to say that again? Looking down. Yeah,
exactly. So I didn't get as much crap as a lot of boys do did in that era, especially when you were like that. And growing up, I just never really was friends with those men. And so I really connect with men who are like me in that way, who are more interested in other people, more empathetic, more, you know. And so Bracken and I are really good friends because he is that guy. He is a guy who, despite the anger he displays daily on social media, I always talk to him about the fact that he's just like, I don't know anybody who picks more fights than Bracken. Like on social media, he picks fights all the time. He gets angry about things. It's like, you can't save everybody, man. You can't like, so we have that, but we really do, I'm lucky in that what I do for a living has allowed me as a middle-aged guy to have a lot more male friends than I did when I was younger, because the guys that I knew when I was younger weren't like me. But the more writers that you know, the more actors that you know, the more artists that you know more people who don't succumb to that toxic masculinity, and who also have perhaps been hounded or injured by it in their youth, right? So you have all of that. So we've always sort of connected on that basis. I admire the guy that he is. And for this book in particular, when I was starting out, people didn't use beta readers that I knew of. It was a concept that didn't even occur to me. And so for me, even now, I'm usually so late on my book deadlines that I don't have time to have anybody beta read my stuff. And when I do, it's usually like, I'll have a couple of friends and say, would you please read this for this reason or that reason? And with this book, Bracken was the only person I asked to read it in advance, because I felt like he would understand all the things that I was trying to do with the domestic drama that's happening in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to sort of get a gut check from him on some of the things that I was doing in there. And so that's why I was dedicated to him.
I love that so much. Thank you. And I'll just say, not to like keep this going into the Bracken thing, but I've only met him in person one time, and he is as you say, he picks fights on social media all the time. I met him in person like one time. We were like walking in a parking garage going to lunch, and he was just like, are you okay to do all these stairs? You're wearing Sabrina Spellman shoes. And I was like, yeah, I'm okay to walk. And he's like, I didn't want you to have to. And he was just like so sweet and kind. And I was like, and that is everything you need to know about this
person. I don't actually know what Sabrina Spellman shoes look like. I'm assuming
they're like witch shoes.
No, but I'm like picturing like, I'm assuming from the newer series, not from Melissa Joan Hart.
I mean, I can like, I definitely show you the shoes. They're okay. Cute. Normally I'm in Doc Martens like 99% of the time.
Yeah, no, I mean,
I was at an event where I wore heels.
Right. But I'm behind on the show. I'm going, I don't remember her ever wearing shoes that I go, you shouldn't do stairs in that.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll show you shoes.
But I love that he's like Sabrina Spellman shoes.
I know. I was like, Sabrina Spellman shoes. Yes, they exactly are.
Thank you.
So Christopher, before we end, is there anything, I know you've been working on a lot of stuff that you can't talk about.
There's some reason you're in Los Angeles.
You can ask about anything. Just like,
what are you doing in Los Angeles?
Can you give us like a 30-second briefing of what might have happened in Los Angeles without giving us anything that we can?
I have co-written, and I was out there co-directing an audio drama series that'll be announced this summer and will be out in, I think, October.
Can you tell us what an audio drama is? Because we're not talking like, are we talking a book that's read by multiple people, or tell me what an audio drama means?
I'm talking about a full cast, fully acted, dramatized, music, special effects, everything, you know.
Like an old-timey radio play, except yes. good.
Okay, so I told you about reading or listening to Lincoln and the Bardo and how that just absolutely blew me away. And afterwards, then having to look up who everybody was, because I think everybody in Hollywood's like, yes, I would like to read one line, because there were just so many people in this. But it had a little bit of music, but not in special effects. But I just like going, I would like to read the book maybe, because I'm sure it would be different. But I read
the book, but didn't listen to the
It was fantastic. It was ridiculous. I mean, Nick Kroll was one of the, not Nick Kroll, who am I thinking of? I'm blanking on some of who the actors were, but it was everybody from Don Cheadle to the author himself was reading one of the parts, but it was just fantastic. Megan Mullally's yelling as some questionable character.
Can we ask, is this the audio drama you were directing?
Co-directing.
Co-directing. Is that something that you have written?
Yeah, it's not based on a novel of mine, no.
Okay.
So it's maybe a new project.
It's a new project.
Or maybe a comic,
It's a new project.
We don't want to get you in trouble.
Yeah, no, but I will say that it was my first time directing something that wasn't on stage. I had a phenomenal time, loved it so much, and I'm going to hopefully do a lot more of it.
And then how will that be available? Do you know, like what's the distribution thing? Would that be something on Audible or?
It will be available on, you know, whatever your audio, channel.
Everywhere. Things.
Well, something random. Those who watch the show know that like this is available on most different audio platforms for podcasts. I didn't know we were on Audible, and it freaked me out finding like, what is our podcast doing? Apparently, we're on Audible, so
we're everywhere. Everywhere,
and we always are telling people, hey, you know, go to the YouTube channel and subscribe. So if you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe. But it's one of those things where for things that don't really fit easily in a category, and I feel like our show doesn't really fit easily in a category because we are a video podcast, but we're not like a traditional interview where we've got our very set list of questions. I won't say which author after our interview was like, that was the most random interview. And we're like, you're welcome.
I like random. That's
just how we are. But I was going to say something like an audio drama. I don't even know where that would fit, but I would love to. That's the absolute.
Well, I mean, for instance, for me. I guess the best, most recent example is the Sandman audio. Mm-hmm. Which like the one that we're doing, is full cast, full special effects, full music, full everything.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds amazing. Christopher, you've been awesome. Please come back again.
I'd love to.
I'm like, we'll have you back anytime. Just like, as long as you're like fine with us wearing costumes and just being let's just talk about Halloween for the entire time.
And as long as I can continue to drink from my Creature Double Feature mug, we're good.
Of course. Nice. I feel like that's going to be mandatory. Mm-hmm. So Christopher, thank you for being here. Everybody who is watching this live, watching it on the replay, watching it on video, just listening to my voice, please buy All Hallows. I loved it. If you are an audiobook person, it is one of the best audiobooks I have ever listened to in my life. The cast is
perfect. Excellent job. Yes. Go for
it. And people who are interested, please tune in next week when we have the one, the only Eric Prewitt swearing and talking about his book, Something Bad Wrong. He is a swearer.
I was going to say, do we know he's swearing? He hasn't even come on yet. Now you're already promising him. Promising profanity, Jennifer?
I interviewed him and his bestie, Sean Cosby, for an episode of A Noir in the Bar of a different podcast I did. And there were a lot of amazing swear combinations.
Did he have a pet chocolat? I really like chocolat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chocolat. All right. So everybody, thank you for tuning in. Please, again, buy All Hallows. Thank you, Christopher, for being here.
Thank you,
Allison. Your voice held out the entire time.
Mostly.
So we will see you all next week.